So, actually, like thinking about Masaki had me thinking like about this whole like efficiency versus security thing, which I was saying we could talk about. So first of all, let me describe what I was generally thinking. I guess on other podcasts, like I went on the Rage Quit Wire one, and when I described the Outcast stable, I broke them up on the dimension of like not only Schemey versus Killy, but efficiency versus security. And the and so my conception there is like what efficiency is at like the root level. So I'm just going to restate everything I said there, first of all. What efficiency is just sort of if you're an efficient crew, you do more with less, right? That's just it by definition. So you're able to do score your points with less actions, get more kills with less actions, that kind of stuff. The balancing factor there is if you are efficient, you're also swingy. You're more susceptible to like bad luck and good luck. Maybe a lot of your attacks, you're fishing for moderate on negative stuff like that, and that's how you get your. That's the balancing factor of efficiency. Otherwise, everyone would just take efficient stuff all the time because it does more for less, right? So on the opposite side of the spectrum is security, which is my way of basically just saying, does things without luck coming into it, but you're less efficient because it takes more actions to do something, but when you do it, you guarantee that you do it. So a concrete example of that is just taking focused attacks. So in the Misaki example, like I feel like she's not an efficient master because she is Mentu, but she is a secure master because she stats 7 and she has the 245 damage track and has the executes, which you can set up. So whenever you do set up something important, you can guarantee that you make it happen. You trade that for being efficient. You're less efficient. It takes more actions to do whatever you're doing. So that's my general idea of what those two terms mean in contrast to each other when it comes to Malifaux. So first of all, does that make sense to you? Like, do you need
Yeah,
more examples
no,
for
I
that?
understand.
Okay, yeah.
I get
So
what you
like
mean.
focused attacking is security, like plus flips with low stats would be efficiency. But I think that maybe that example or that sort of paradigm can be stretched out to like multiple dimensions in the game. I wanted to just sort of talk that out because what all of my examples have been around combat, right? And I think it makes sense in terms of combat, but I've also been wondering if it's like if that's a meaningful scale, a meaningful gradient when you're thinking about like scoring points. Like let them bleed in some ways is a very efficient scheme. You're not going to have to do extra actions to score it most of the time.
Yeah, that's why I chose it. I didn't want to interact. I didn't want to waste AP on interacting when I was in recover and or recover. Yeah, recover evidence. That's what it's called. Yeah. So I was like, I'll just hit him and score that while he's making him drop his things. And I felt like outside of Fuhatsu, like if I could just keep the card engine going, I could just make, I could win in like any combat unless he like started focusing. And then even then, if he has to focus, I'm probably still winning if I'm on the whole min three train.
Like assassinate can be really efficient too. Let them bleed, all that stuff. All the stuff that you're kind of, you don't have to do extra actions to score, but if you're winning, you kind of just score. Like claim jump. Claim jump's like a very efficient scheme. But in contrast, I don't feel like claim jump is a very secure scheme because if you're losing or if like your opponent just gets a whiff of it, if they have the tools randomly in their list to just constantly deny you, then you can just completely miss out on 2 points there pretty easily.
I think it also depends on the strat. Certain schemes become efficient or secure based on the strat, and they can change.
Yeah, that's true. Let's just go through the list then. Let's just think about this. So breakthrough, that is one that's like secure, right? Because it takes a shit ton of AP to score it because, strat independent, that would be something where you have to spend a lot of AP to get over there. But once you do, you could pretty much easily score it. And if any one model dies, you can still score it. that's probably like a pretty big characteristic of like a secure scheme, is that one model dying is not going to ruin it for you. You can still kind of set it up.
A lot of ones that don't list one, like most likely don't list one of your models by name.
I will say like Take Prisoner is probably the opposite, because you never, you rarely just do it by accident. Usually you have to bring a specific model to do it, and that's like their job is to take prisoner.
Well, yeah, you can, that's the thing. You can, you know, if Breakthrough is secure, you can still hire models that are efficient at doing it.
Uh-huh. Well, definitely, yeah. You should be, right?
I mean, you should be, yeah, obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
If you have something that can make it easier, you should.
Like, Let Them Bleed is another example of like, sorry, I'm reading the wrong ones. Like, Research Mission is like a secure one, because you have no reason to put markers there unless it's like you're very specifically hiring for it usually, and you're putting markers in a specific spot, and you're like guaranteeing that you can't be denied that like first point at least. So it's like super secure, but it's not very efficient, because you're like, you have to put your model in one specific spot, and it could be in an irrelevant spot.
Yeah, it takes a lot of setup.
I feel like Spread Them Out is kind of, how do you feel about that? Because I feel like that's kind of a secure one. Because
when you take that,
yeah, you're saying I'm going to invest a lot of actions, but you can't kill any one or two or even three models and stop me from potentially scoring it. But on the other side, I'm like investing a lot in scoring it.
I mean, yeah, because like based on the strat, like if you look at, I don't even know the name. What is the strat with the 5 points?
Corrupted Ley Lines?
Corrupted Ley Lines, yeah. If you look at Corrupted Ley Lines, like if it's turn 3 and they've already scored their two points, then it's like on the two like back ones, and now they're going towards the center or one on your end. If you start scoring Breakthrough, it's like secure, because it's, it being secure, like it also means like it'd be inefficient for your opponent to like try to stop you. Like your opponent,
which is kind of what
sacrifice
jump is, right? I mean,
yeah, your opponent would have to like sacrifice their efficiency. But then now claim jump's kind of the opposite, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
Sometimes it's like, you know, I'm gonna go kill like when I had claim jump that one time and you had take prisoner. Like that's like an extreme like example. Yeah, but just by doing what you need to do, you can be denying it.
Yeah, I feel like claim jump is definitely the poster boy for the efficient one, because you basically have very little agency on whether it gets denied. You just get to do it if you're like already doing good stuff, you know?
Yeah, you just show up and you're going to score it if your opponent doesn't do anything to stop it.
So that makes me think. So usually when you're picking schemes, you usually like pick one that's kind of interacty and one that's less so. I wonder if you can almost think about it as if you need to have one that's sort of secure and one that's sort of efficient, because you can't guarantee, like you shouldn't be able to be secure in both. Like that almost feels impossible. I feel like you could go for being efficient in both, but then you would have to like really be winning attrition. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like if you're going for one that's secure in both, your opponent will probably be able to, like, if they pick schemes that are, because if you pick two that are secure and you hire accordingly, your opponent will probably be able to pick two that are efficient, and you won't be able to stop his efficient schemes.
Yeah, because
putting
you'll
so much AP into your schemes that he'll be able to just score his as well. So then it just goes to who wins on strat, and probably the person with the two efficient ones will win on strat.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. Obviously that this completely interacts with your crew. Cause like
your crew, I'm the matchup.
Like Vendetta is to me an efficiency one, like at just sort of the base level, because it kind of only works if your opponent doesn't have the AP to invest in killing the model for the second point. You know what I mean? Like the first point is like an efficiency thing. It's like at some point I'm going to take an attack action with this like range 14 model, and he's going to knock you to half health and whatever. I was doing damage anyway, so that's very efficient. the trade-off is that you have basically no agency on the second point, other than just running your model to a corner, which is also bad. So like, you're kind of just gambling on that your opponent will not have the extra AP to kill that model for the second point. So it's like super efficient. But yeah, I played a shit ton of Terra, which has the Scion of the Void, which with the combination of it being buried, attacking while buried, attacking through obliteration minions, and having the potential for activation control so that at the end of the game, I'll unbury at last activation, means it's an insanely secure play. But it's a lot of investment, right? Because I just named like 15 things that I have to do. But that is like a guarantee that I could score the 2 points off that. I'm basically saying all that, but I still think the point we were just talking about is true, in that you kind of want something secure and something efficient default. And then if you recognize like matchup differences, maybe that's when you go like double efficient or double secure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let me explain that with like an example, right? So if I'm playing at Master Declaration and at List Declaration, I look and I see that my models match up super well against yours, that I have like the attrition advantage. I think I go double efficient.
Absolutely.
Because
yeah,
I know that I can punch your teeth in. I know that I can at least get a 15-point Soulstone differential at the end of the game, you know? So why not be efficient and score my points while I know I'm, you know, why I know I'm going to be beating your ass. I might as well be taking the, I don't want to slow that down.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to stop to drop your schemes or whatever. You just want to keep chugging along.
Yeah, because that's an advantage I have. I recognize that I have the matchup advantage and I need to keep playing into that. And if I take, spread them out and, what's another one that's like really AP intensive? Let's just say Runic Binding for the sake of a horrible example. And I have to drop 6 scheme markers.
Yeah, that's 6.
I've just given away my advantage, which was I'm kicking the shit out of you, you know?
Yeah, that 6 AP could, you know, turn the tide for them.
Now, I haven't thought about this, but I wonder if the opposite is true. I wonder if I recognize I have an attrition disadvantage, I can go for secure schemes as opposed to efficient ones.
Yes, absolutely.
You think so?
In my game, Molly versus Lady J, I did exactly that. Well, I wish I had the lists in front of me. I knew that I was playing Molly and I had...
Oh, you don't have to go too deep detailed, but I mean, like, what do you mean by that?
I picked spread them out and... What was the other one I picked? Another schemey one. I don't remember what it was.
Was it Breakthrough?
No, it wasn't Breakthrough.
Research Mission?
No, it wasn't Research Mission. Spread them out and... Damn, I wish I remembered.
Hidden Martyrs?
It might have been Hidden Martyrs.
Yeah.
It was Hidden Martyrs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I knew he was just going to destroy me. And he did. He killed... like a 10 stone, a 9 to between 9 and 11 stone model every single turn in the first 3 turns.
Yeah.
And I think I like, lost by 1.
I felt like atting you in the Discord today because they were talking about how Lady J's undead hate is like bad and is not like she doesn't hate undead enough.
Yeah.
And I felt like atting you because you got tabled by Lady J like 2 weeks ago.
She hates him. She hates him a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in that case, I was like, well, he's going to be killing me, so I'm going to pick this. And I was kind of... I took something that would have been like pretty secure and made it kind of, I guess, efficient. But it was kind of risky where I kind of just threw out the security because one of my Hidden Martyrs was a Krooligan, which are pretty easy to kill.
Yeah.
So I kind of had to like play like run and hide at the end. And that's why I ended up losing by 1 instead of tying.
Yeah, that was like your efficient point, right? And you didn't get it. And that was the one point you didn't get. That makes sense to me because like spread them out, like we said, is secure because you can
actually
get tabled like you did.
I didn't get the spread them out. I got the... But either way, it was I had a choice. Like, it was either drop the steam or run. So it didn't matter.
Okay. But yeah, like, spread them out is secure because you can literally get tabled and still get the markers out.
Which I did.
And then Hidden Martyrs is also pretty secure because you're at least getting 1 point, even if you're getting tabled. Pretty much. It's very hard to not score one on that.
They have to do like the turn one, like kill.
Yeah. Or kill both, which is also like really freaking hard.
Yeah.
Especially if you know, especially knowing it's secret, and you're the one who knows to not let them do it.
Do that.
Yes. So I think that's a good example because you recognize you're in a matchup disadvantage and you took two schemes that were, you put your security into your points and not into your combat.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I didn't kill a single model, I don't think.
That's brutal. Was that 7-6?
It was 7-6.
Damn, dude. You and Pace keep having close ones, dude.
And on the last, it could have been, the game could have either ended 7-6. I think most likely it should have been a tie. And then, but he was advantaged to get a point over me. And then I had a slight chance to get a point over him.
Mm. I keep having close ones with Pace too. We have a nice little competitive meta going now.
Yeah.
Hopefully once COVID's over, we can recruit more.
True.
But yeah, I think that's a really interesting way of thinking about it. Not just like interacts versus not interacts, but secure versus efficient in terms of like selecting your schemes. But I was thinking about this because I feel like in a lot of games, someone has point security and combat efficiency, and the other person has combat security and point efficiency. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that most games seem to play. Like, I've seen, like if you're taking a Texas style list where they don't bring minions, you're not online enough to know about this kind of shit. I'm too online, I guess. Yeah, but if you're taking like a Texas style list where they don't bring minions. Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying the state? Yeah, like the state, not like toast.
Oh, I lost interest.
Oh, shit. But on like pods and stuff like that, they've basically talked about how that they don't like, you know, models that can die. So like all of their minions have upgrades and they only bring like 8 stolen or more cost stuff. And they usually have 6 or 7 models in a list versus like 8, you know, 7, 8, 9 other places. I think if you're inherently playing that style, you usually have combat security because what you're building into your list is you're building agency.
Yeah.
With all those upgrades.
Mike's list in the game I just played.
Yeah.
He had 1 minion, I think.
Yeah, he basically took the superstars, right? He took Fahatsu, he took all the fat kids.
Yeah, he named the list when I saw it and on the app it was Naruto Run.
Son of a bitch. I'm glad he lost. It's funny. But yeah, he had 2 ninja upgrades and everything, so
yeah.
He's definitely updating like investing in combat security. Like he had
But my list was the same.
A lot of the agency sort of. In terms of like what he was going to be able to, like his output was kind of capped in a certain way, you know, because it was, you only had so much AP in the list and you had invested a bunch in whenever you do take an action, it's going to be, you're going to have agency over what you're going to do with that action.
Yeah.
You know, like he had basically where, everybody in his list hits hard, but
that's where it matched up poorly for him because we had about the same models, but because he had a list with a lower model count, when I was being able to discard to put him on negatives on like all his targets, like it really started hurting him. Like yeah, I was basically trading a card in my hand for one of his AP.
And that's a really bad proposition when you have less AP.
Yeah. And we did it. I discarded a card every chance I got. I only went down to no cards once for like 2 activations.
Yeah, but you also, so to your point, you basically said that you also built like a combat security list because you had the two ancient pack, you had a combo list around building, putting staggered on people. And then once they're staggered, you just like wombo combo them into the dirt, you know?
Yeah, I was really strong because like if I had, I had Fuhatsu and the other one, I don't know their names. I just know Fuhatsu. Fuhatsu and the one that summons.
Minako.
I had them both like they activated, then I had them both staggered. And then like I didn't have to worry about like activating my guys to like get activations out of them before they died, because at the start of the turn I could just discard cards to put them on negatives. So if he activated a guy to get him out of staggered, I could just activate the guy to attack like the staggered guy. I didn't have to worry about my guy that was almost dead, really.
Mm-hmm.
That happened with Alan Reed. Like, he went hard on Alan Reed, and then I was like, I'll go with the Investigator and attack the guy that's still staggered, and I did a lot of damage. And then he attacked Alan Reed again, and I popped a stone or two. And then I just went with the Lawyer and put Shielded on Alan Reed. And then he activated it, like, again and attacked, did something to Alan Reed, and he lived still. So like having all that security to where like I didn't have to like activate things or worry about them dying. I could probably even look on the app. I think almost every model I had was at one health at the end of the
Holy
game.
Holy shit.
I had one, two, three. Only three. Oh, four. Alan Reed and Investigator, the False Witness, and the Doppelganger were all on one health.
And so you took Let Them Bleed and what?
Hidden Martyrs on one of my Investigators and the Lawyer.
And then what did he take?
He took Spread Them Out and Sabotage.
See, here we go. See, I think that's the point, right? You both took secure combat lists, but you took efficient schemes and he took very secure schemes. Because
especially into the strat is what really tips it over.
Oh yeah,
in my favor. Like if it was,
well that was definitely like a clear mistake. The fact that he had to have five scheme markers out in addition to like recover evidence. But let's just say, for the sake of this discussion, let's just say he took instead of sabotage, he took take prisoner. Yeah. Because that would be like a more secure thing. Like you would have to set up some kind of push-pull trigger, usually, plus the movement AP invested in it. And then the AP lost by interacting with your take prisoner target and then having to not kill it. So that one's like a secure thing. So let's just say that he took both of those. I still feel like you made the right choice in taking the efficiency ones because you knew... You had so much invested in the security with your combat. And
yeah, I just had to grind it out, basically. I need to have AP to just grind out the fight.
So you basically, in order to score schemes, you needed less of a combat advantage than he did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you also kind of had to get luckier on points than he did. Like if he stomped the combat, then he would have an easier time transitioning into points.
Yeah.
Because he would have security there. Like you would have no agency in stopping the points. But he didn't stop the combat, so he didn't get, like, he chose the wrong schemes based off of where the combat ended up.
Yeah. Now, honestly, the first two turns, I was getting crushed. Funny enough. He was destroying me the first two turns. He killed one of my Investigators before I got to activate with Fuhatsu.
On turn one?
Turn two.
Okay. Jeez.
And he put some... Fuhatsu just did work on... Fuhatsu was definitely the MVP. And I should have went like directly on him immediately. But the way the board was set up, he could have... If I... The way the terrain was, if I went towards Fuhatsu... To efficiently get there, I would have had to walk through a spot where he could have just put blast damage on me. He could have stoned for blast damage and like ended me.
Yeah, and he had trained ninja and stuff on him, so it was like,
yeah, so I
that was definitely like a combat mismatch. Like, there was like an attritional advantage he had, just straight up. Like, there's not much, I mean, there's obviously counterplay, but like in terms of dealing with him efficiently or anything like that, it's just like, that's where that's a leg up he has.
Yeah.
The leg down he has is like, and Misaki is, Misaki's kind of bad at killing anything like on your list. Chance.
And that was like my plan. My whole plan was like to get the doppelganger, like issue command to it to move it closer, and then obey it to like move it even closer so I could lure him in. But then I was like, he has ruthless. He'll just kill the doppelganger.
Oh yeah. That's brutal.
Yeah. So that like, I was like, oh, I'll just run over here and try to like get an advantage and then run over there and attack him.
Yeah. So weirdly, it kind of sucks that he lived the entire game, but I feel like you made the right choice in not overcommitting to trying to take him down. Like,
Alan Reed went on and did 5 damage, and then he had the retainer guy that heals. Adekeeper just healed him for 5.
Oh, yeah, like, it's Sun Quang, yeah.
Yeah. That guy's awesome.
Yeah, he had so much investment in combat security, actually, like in retrospect. Like,
but then I mimicked his heal, which was tight.
Like, yeah, he had the heals. He could like bubble and like make it where you could not kill anything in his list if you really wanted to. But all of that would require, I think that was the right read. I think he had the right list read, but if he would have chose more efficient schemes, then he probably would have won, because it sounds like
he should have just
he had the
sabotage and that's it. If he had sabotage and something else.
Yeah.
He couldn't, I don't think he could do Hidden Martyrs was the problem, because everything was so expensive.
Probably let them bleed then. I mean, it sounds like he scored it both times. So yeah, I think he wanted a more efficient scheme there. But I think that brings up like a good point that I've been thinking about in terms of like the Fahatsu there being like the obvious model that crushes the shit out of your list. Because you had like no real good ways to deal with it, even though he was going to be such a problem. If you would have fixated on trying to deal with him anyway, I feel like you would have definitely lost, which is a common way to lose Malifaux.
My solution was to just be engaged with everything else.
Yeah.
Because then even with like, what's it called? I can still, then I discard cards and he's actually on a minus.
Yeah.
Instead of just making it even.
But I feel like that's definitely an easy way to lose Malifaux in a way. In like a surface level analysis of like master matchups, that's usually incorrect, where people will look at the master and only filter it through that attrition lens. Like, okay, well, this master is a problem. How do I kill this master? Okay, well, this out of keyword model, you know, like say I'm playing Colette or whatever. I know she's got the defense trigger. Oh, I did not win at Master Declaration. I don't have anything that can kill Colette. Okay, well, let me grab Sue because he can turn off defense triggers within 3. Okay, that can work, but I feel like at a surface level, like fixating on the things you can't deal with is a good way to lose instead of playing to your strengths.
Yeah, some people try to like tech too hard into like these things, and it's like you're giving up so much so you can like do something that in the end probably doesn't even matter. Like the amount you're giving up to do it, it probably doesn't have enough of an impact.
Yeah, definitely.
Like there's no model you're bringing in that like tech something that's going to make you kill their master on turn 3 or 2. From it being impossible to be like, oh, you're dead.
Yeah. If you kill it on 5, who cares? You know? So a lot of 4, the time,
it's probably not worth it for what you gave up.
A lot of time when you're like, how do I kill this master? The answer is just like,
don't ignore it. Don't kill anything the whole game.
Yeah. It seems to work with Molly. Just don't kill anything and score your 7 points.
I brought 3 Cooligans just because I was like, yeah, we're going to be scheming. I'm going to spread everything out, and then they're just going to take off.
Buyer's side is so good.
What they did.
Rezzard's minions are so insane.
There's two buyer side minions. I just realized that in Rezzard's.
Like, no, people complain about Thunder's versatiles and like Arcanist upgrades and whatever. Rezzard's minions don't get talked about enough and how fucking good they are.
That is true.
Like, it's not even close. Like,
I think game where I played the Rabble Risers.
Yeah.
Those guys are really good.
Those little bastards.
They're so good.
Full list of terrifying, and I had willpower 5 was my highest.
Yeah,
willpower.
With the upgrade to heal them. Oh my god. Cool. What else was healing them? I had something. What do they have that made it so good? Oh, I could double activate them so they regen twice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was nuts. That was actually fun playing that list.
Yeah, I got insanely lucky to win that game. I will say. It was just on the terrifying flips. It was just hard of cards.
Insanely McCabe.
Yeah, I was channeling Yugi Moto, dude. It's time. Da-da-da-da-da. Take a move, duel. You get it? Because I'm playing McCabe?
Yeah. You know, I did something for the first time in the last game I just played.
What's that?
I Black Jokered twice in one turn.
Ooh, achievement unlocked.
Yeah. And I think Pace, no, he almost redded twice because he got to shuffle the red Joker back in.
Oh,
and he had like no cards left. I thought in the same turn, I was going to black twice and he was going to red twice.
Damn.
And my reds were, I did a, on my first attack with an investigator, I got a red. I think that happened like twice. So I got Red Joker for 4 damage.
Doesn't it suck how much the Jokers color your impression of shit? Like, I'll go like weeks at a time thinking that like some model's fucking amazing and it's just because it Red Jokered once. I'm like, ah, so good. Did 6 damage. Oh.
That doesn't really happen to me. I feel like.
Happens to me all the time. For sure.
I'm telling you, man. Just look at a model as if it was flipping 7s. Nah. Always flipping 7s. That's how you tell how good it is.
I'm fishing for reds every day.
How card hungry that card is, I guess, that model is. Like, can they do anything if they just constantly flip 7s?
Yeah.
And that's your answer. If you think they'd be horrible, like if they have an action that doesn't go off on just the 7.
Oh, are you talking to me about TNs, bro?
Yeah. You hate TNs.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir, dog.
Yeah, you hate like if you have 10 TNs that need a 4, you're like,
yeah, that's a no-go. That's a no-go. I'm stomping those models. I'm throwing those models on the floor, getting my fucking hiking boots on and stomping those bitches to smithereens. You got a TN 6 coming to this dojo? All right, well, I don't know. I can branch off from here. I had some other things that we could talk about, or we can just call it quits. Up to you.
No, I can keep talking.
I was thinking about this efficiency versus security paradigm. And I was thinking when watching like battle reports, I'm like, okay, well, this guy's got combat security, but his opponent has got point security. So like all they have to do is just like delay combat and like make it as, you know, insecure as possible. If that makes sense, you know, like force them to take more walks and less punches, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways that is a way of thinking about the game that is like similar to the know your beatdown kind of philosophy from Magic and all that shit. You know, like incorrectly assessing if you're the beatdown is like how you lose, or, you know, incorrectly assessing that who's the control, that kind of stuff. And I think in some ways, incorrectly assessing how much security versus efficiency is in your list is a good way to lose at like list writing and scheme selection. But I feel like there's also other ways of thinking about like these kind of assessments that exist in Malifaux that we don't really think about as much. So the first one I was thinking about was something that they used to talk about on in War Machine a bunch, specifically like Muzon Minis would talk about this every now and then. It's like, not only do you need to know who is the beatdown versus control, you also need to know who has range advantage versus range disadvantage. And that is a thing that if you incorrectly assess, lose you a game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds like that stands out to you.
Yeah, I mean, like in Magic, it's like the equivalent, like where a game like kind of gets to kind of like the mid game or the late game in a game of Magic, and you both have a bunch of creatures on the board, and you see this happen where, you know, the person draws a card, plays a land, and then they pass, and the other player draws a card, plays a land, and passes, or plays another creature and passes. It's like somebody is supposed to be attacking.
Yeah.
Based on everything that's going on, like someone's supposed to be attacking and someone's supposed to be blocking. And like sometimes, like, you know, but there's unknown factors like the hand, and so you don't know what's in their hand, but like there, you know, there is an answer. It's just you maybe you can't find it, but like someone is supposed to be attacking and someone is supposed to be defending. And there's so many games where you just see people with their wall of creatures and they're just like not doing anything.
That sounds like me when I play Magic. Yeah, I'm never attacking. But I think, yeah, and I think it exists for Malifaux, and it's independent of control versus beatdown. And it's like who has the range advantage. And that's the person who needs to be defending, and the person who needs to be attacking is range disadvantage. In this example.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most basic example. It's like if they have a guy, a model with a gun, and you have a guy that's melee, you have to walk charge. Like you can't just stand there forever and just, you know, wait. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it gotta get in there. It sounds like that on the surface, but a lot of the times you can misattribute who actually had the range advantage based off stuff like that. Like you had a gun versus not, when in actuality, if you just kind of like summoners in some ways have range advantage, because if we don't melee, I'm advantaged because I'll just make more boys. So when we do melee, I have more boys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not just gun versus no gun.
Well, yeah.
It could just and it's be, also it like just how much you're exposing range. Yourself. Yeah. And
or if your opponent has, I don't know, like in this game, the game I just played, all his guys had like charge through. So like letting him charge gives him a plus on the damage flip.
And like, yeah, that's a good point too. And but like, say you're playing against Hoffman, right? And he's got Joss and who's the Langston and like one other big fat metal robot who punches the shit out of you. But he's also got Melissa Kaur, who's got her gun. And you're playing, pick an Everborn Master. I don't know, pick one. Pandora.
I'm playing Pandora.
So all your shit's basically melee, except for like Pandora's Box, stuff like that. But Pandora may not be the best example here. But just because he has Melissa, who's standing there shooting.
I'm playing, you know, Titania.
Okay, Titania, that works. All you have is the range 8 like spell or something. Just because he has Melissa or whatever who's shooting you, he's going to be shooting through the concealment and stuff like that every turn, doesn't mean that you're range disadvantage, because what he's losing by having his models just standing there may be more than what you're losing by having your models just stand there. Uh-huh. You could be focusing and maybe
scheming.
Yeah, scheming, anything like that. But also, like, you may have differential, like damage curves. Like, for example, say if you charge a model in there, and for the sake of this example, like, all of his models are move 4, and you went in there to engage that model and stop it from shooting. But now what you've done is enabled all these move 4 guys to punch the shit out of you. They can just immediately charge you from where they're standing. And get two swings apiece, you're dead. Versus if they had to take their walk actions, they had to, you know, try and divvy up their powerful attacks elsewhere, like they would have been super inefficient in like their ability to kill. Like this is a case where they're like really secure. If you're playing Titania in this example, And even though he's got the gun and you don't, you have the Titania Masters range 8, maybe like just sitting on your hands for one turn and then using your range on like turn 2 is like the actual best play. Mm-hmm. But if you incorrectly assess like where your range strengths are, that's like a way to lose the game.
Just get slaughtered, yeah.
Yeah. Like we had that one game that was Von Schill versus Pandora at that tournament. And that was a game where I was clearly ranged advantaged. You couldn't just like run at me. So like,
that was a tough one. Yeah. In that game, I ran at you and I probably should have tried to like just scheme as much as possible.
Yeah. So
which was hard. That one was really hard.
I think at some level, like I was ranged advantaged if you just looked at our cards, but the scheme pool made it where you were actually like a little ranged advantage in terms of like your ability to dictate where the line of engagement was going to happen. So like if you could have dictated like this is actually where we're fighting because this is where the points are, then you almost have like sort of a range advantage in terms of like I can stand here at this range and do everything I want to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And whoever is like dictating that line and like saying this is where I'm advantaged is like usually in the driver's seat.
That game was really hard. I'm trying to think back and decide like how I would have played that game differently. Because my biggest thing was I was trying to get into a position where I could be as efficient as possible with my AP, but by trying to get there, it like got wiped off the table.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think this is an example where you correctly assess that you're a range disadvantage, but maybe incorrectly assessed who was the beatdown. Because I think maybe. I was range advantage, but I was also the beatdown and you were the control.
Yeah. I think I tried to get close to you. I should have like, look, I kind of went down the middle at you. I really should have just moved all my models to the further side of the board.
Which is a control play.
Yeah. And let you come closer, and then I could have engaged you. Because based on my... I'm trying to remember what schemes I took. I took the center line one.
Yeah, harness the ley lines.
Yeah, I took that. So I could have played that off of like that side towards the center. And there was like a center terrain piece, which is kind of even better for me, where I could have kind of played around that and yeah, then I mean, went
we,
in.
We talked that game out, and I feel like in retrospect, granted it was in retrospect, and you saw how hard it was for me to transition my I was like heavily advantaged in terms of combat, but it was still kind of difficult for me to get my points. Like in retrospect, you seeing that, you realize like, oh, well, if I would have just not got shot for one turn, then I would have put him on way more of a timer.
It was the shock. I didn't really know the crew. It was the shockwaves. Remember, there's the shockwaves on that one model.
Yeah, definitely.
That just destroyed me.
I killed Pandora without attacking her. So
yeah.
That was, I mean, that's a, that is a very, like that won't happen maybe ever again.
Yeah, probably not.
But I think it's still a decent example in that I think that is the correct assessment that I was range advantage, but you were the control and I was the beatdown. So even though these two kind of paradigm things, you would think, well, if I'm beatdown, I charge in. And then if you're range disadvantage, you charge in. But in actuality, both of us can't be right. Like your example of like the attacking models, both of us can't be right.
Yeah, someone's always
wrong. Or both of us can't be wrong or something. I don't know.
No, both can't be right.
That makes more sense.
I think you both can be wrong if you're both doing the wrong thing.
That's true. That's actually probably 90% of Malifaux, including, you know, that's 90% of the actions I take. You know, this is probably wrong. Let's hope it's not that wrong.
Yeah, sometimes it's, yeah, especially like early in the game, you don't, you know, in trying to determine what your opponent's trying to do. So, you know, it could be a play that's great, that might be great for you, but if your opponent's happy you made it, it was probably wrong, even though if it helped you.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, results oriented thinking and stuff like that can screw you in that way. I wonder if there are other sort of X versus Y ways of thinking about the game that like you can use to sort of generalize why you won and why you lost. And I don't really have any others. Those are the two that I was kind
of
thinking about.
Number of jokers flipped.
True. I definitely agree with that. I'm a joker fisherman.
That's it. You count up the jokers. You give yourself a plus one for every red joker you flip, and a minus one for every black joker you flip, and you compare the difference with your opponent, and that's how many points you should have won or lost by.
Shit.
That's it.
This is big brain podcasting right here. So what you're saying is, all right, I'm gonna be serious with this. So if I build a list that exactly flips, I don't know, what's three quarters of my deck, I'm going to maximize the chance that I hit red but not black, and that's how I win every tournament for forever.
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
Sick. Gonna run some numbers. Leroy Jenkins style right quick. I'm gonna think some more. I think there's other like X versus Y ways of thinking about the game, and that like I'm gonna think about that more.
Yeah, there's definitely more out there.
So I guess if you think of one, tell us in the Discord and join it.
Also message it. We're now answering questions on the podcast, so just privately message Cody all your questions.
Please, God.
And no. We'll feature them on the show if they're good enough.
I do. You would be surprised how many DMs I respond. I respond to everyone who messages me for sure.
Really? No one has ever messaged me anything.
Well, you're very offline. Like you're correct. Very, I'm very online. So people message me on Facebook all the time and shit.
Yeah. I'm in the shadows.
Some people actually message me and like think I have clout and shit. They're like, sorry to bother you, dude. It's kind of funny. No one in this game has clout, FYI, if you're like...
Sorry to bother you.
If you're listening.
I know you. You're probably really busy playing a game against yourself.
Oh, God. Or taking a shit in writing lists on your app.
Yeah.
Those are the only two things... that I have attributed to my name at this point. I hope
the notification of my message didn't disrupt your list building.
All right, man, let's be done with this.
All right.
Stop it.
What are you doing in my swamp?
Yeah, dude, Fahatsu, he was nuts.
He's a dirty boy, dude.
He was the only thing that really, like, he was definitely MVP.
Did you win that game or lose it?
I won by a point, but I almost threw it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How's that?
Well, on the last turn, I was like, I should go. I actually didn't need last activation.
Mm-hmm.
And I really needed to actually go first.
Because you guys are playing recover, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't have anything that like really needed last activation. I took what did I take? I took what's it called? Hidden Martyrs and Let Them Bleed.
Yeah.
Which so I thought hidden, I would hidden's never the only take one you need Let Them activation Bleed
control for. But I mean like you didn't really have any good alternatives, right? I mean
yeah, they were kind of bad.
Were you able to score Let Them Bleed?
I scored both points.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised by that because he had Monaco, which seems like a freaking model designed in a lab to fuck up the second point of Let Them Bleed. Because why? she can summon the Katashiro, who are models that don't have summoning upgrades. So, or wait, do they come in full health? They don't come in full health. But what? I don't remember.
I think they have a summoning upgrade.
Really?
Don't they?
I don't.
Maybe they don't.
I didn't think they did.
I killed her, though.
Oh, you did? Okay, well.
I think.
Good for you.
Yeah. It was crazy. I did a lot of damage with that list.
The whole staggered stacking?
Yeah. Not even that.
Did you kill Misaki?
No, I did no damage to her. I ignored her the whole game. But what I needed to do was go with my lawyer first so that I could shield myself. Because my lawyer was my hidden martyr. And I didn't. So he went first and he killed it in one activation with Fuhatsu.
On turn one?
No, on turn five.
Oh, and that was your second point.
Yeah, for my second point.
So what'd you get? Three strat, two let them bleed, one hidden?
Yeah, and I should have gotten two hidden martyrs. Or at least made him had to work for it and use his master.
Yeah, that's always going to be hard, especially with Fuhatsu around, because if you go early with him, he can just walk away from him at some point, you know?
Yeah.
I guess you have Lucius, though, so you can obey him and all kinds of bullshit, but...
I only ran one lawyer.
Yeah.
Which, I ran the false witness, because I thought I might do some scheming.
Mm-hmm.
But then I just didn't. But the double ancient pact on both of the investigators?
Yeah.
I had three ancient packs on my list.
Yeah.
It's insane. Every single attack that targeted Alan Reed or an investigator, I discarded a card. Or a lawyer. Every attack that I could discard a card, but on a neg I did. And I was never out of cards.
Yeah, that list probably draws like 10 cards.
Yeah, because I was just using the false witness at first just to place the two schemes and then removing them with the investigator. So each investigator would draw two cards in activation, one at the beginning and one at the end.
Jeez.
And then Lucius was drawing me three cards from issuing command on like the middle turns of the game. And then Lawyer was drawing me two cards